The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
No Willie, no Kane, no Stevie, and I know what you're thinking, no bloody point then, but please bear with me because, oh my Jesus Christ, I love club championship. All-Ireland football finalist Nemo Rangers, gone. We have Castlehaven star Michael Hurley coming up on the show. All-Ireland semi-finalist Loch Neil, held in Derry by Coleraine. Replay incoming. Ballanderry, the mighty Ballanderry, gone. Clare champion Six Mile Bridge, gone. Ennis, Clooney Quinn, gone. Tony Kelly doing filthy stuff. Parish Collins playing football in hurling. It's club championship season and it is absolutely bloody brilliant. I've got Conor Heenahan with me here on the line. And Conor, I'll tell you who loves club championship more than anyone. It's Conor Harrison, Downstar, playing for London team Neasden Gaels. Comes home from his own stag day in Ibiza. He tweeted out saying, this is before the weekend, my stag in Ibiza today for 5 nights. Unfortunately, I have to fly home tomorrow evening and fly back to Ibiza Sunday evening as I have a championship final in London on Sunday. And they say football doesn't rule your life. I'll hardly drink today, bring on Ibiza, he says. He actually came back Saturday night, played the game on Sunday, won the game on Sunday, scored 2 points himself, won 2 penalties, Neasden Gaels, Intermediate London Champions, 2-13, St Joseph's not 13. Conor, could you have that sort of commitment for your own club?
This sounds right up your street, Conor. This is what the GAA is all about. To be honest, Conor still sounds like he got a decent stag out of it. Like, he flew out Friday, back to London Saturday, played the game Sunday. He still has tonight and tomorrow night, so he's 3 nights out in Ibiza. And he's doing well to get a 5-night stag in the first place in Ibiza. Jeez, I wish I got 5 nights of my stag. But I don't think this is going to start a trend of allowing club players to take 5 nights out in the middle of the season, especially before a final for a stag. But listen, fair play to him. Sounds like he won 2 penalties, scored 2 points, and they won by 2 goals. So looks like they wouldn't have won without him. So it worked out for him, but I can't see it setting a trend.
Yeah, he's really milking it, 5 nights in Ibiza. He did tweet out on Sunday, put a picture up with the trophy, the London Intermediate Championship trophy. Back in Ibiza, ladies and gentlemen, no better place to celebrate championship win. Harry Stag, Ibiza. I mean, like, it is mad. Like,
I've seen men look happier than he did in the picture as well, to be honest. Maybe he was feeling the effects of the previous 2 days in the beat there, 3 days in the beat there. And then actually I just looked under the replies to his tweet as well, and he had a few of his teammates tweet him. They were having a few beers and he tweeted them back. And my timeline could be wrong on Twitter, but it seemed like it was about 3 or 4 in the morning that he retweeted them back saying he wished he was there. And I was thinking to myself, geez, he probably could find some better things to do in the beat at that time in the morning. But he said he'll make up for it when he gets back, and I'm sure he will.
He's an hour ahead there in Ibiza as well, so it's even later.
Oh, that's probably why.
But he's from Glasdrumming and Down, so it is very interesting. I know it myself, like playing for Skerries in Dublin, where like you do start sort of feeling part of the club. He's obviously playing with this Neasden Gaels crowd in London. Like, to me, looking at it, going, Jesus, he's coming back for London Intermediate Championship. It's not his own native club, but then maybe that is the real beauty of it. Like, I see a few downheads that are playing for him. Ryan O'Hare scored not 4. Kieran O'Hare scored the 2 penalties that Conor Harrison won. So maybe he has sort of created some sort of bond out there.
I think you're right, Jen. I think just from knowing a few of my mates who have played in even for longer terms than just a summer in New York, or even for a while in London as well, is that like you quickly kind of you gain that circle of friends, and you gain it becomes like a club at home. And because there's probably an increased commitment over there to have to play for a club, because you're not just driving 5 minutes to train, and it's often you have to get a tube out for like an hour and a half, 2 tubes, and you're getting home at all hours of the night and stuff like that. So there's probably like nearly as good of a bond, if not as good of a bond. So like you could understand why it would mean so much to him. Geez, it must if he's flying home from Ibiza and flying back out in the middle of his stag.
But this is one of the real problems, you know, with being really talented. Like you're not allowed to go away. You're not allowed to have a stag do, really. You're not allowed qualify to be injured. Like, it's honestly, there's a certain, there's a graph here somewhere, and if you're good enough, you're over the line where you're not injured and you're not away. No matter where you are, you'll be flown back. No matter how injured you are, you'll be tried out for 15 minutes. Like, it's a real pain in the arse for talented players. I wouldn't know, really.
Yeah, but there's an also, well, I wouldn't know either, but there's also a graph that, so he's allowed to do that. He's allowed to go to his stag, come back in the middle of his stag, play a match, and then go back to his stag. Whereas most of us, if you even floated the idea with a manager, is like, well, you can go, but you're not going to be playing when you come back. You're not going to be. So he's on that stage of the graph where he's that good that he has to be flown back, but he's also allowed to go to Ibiza in the middle of the season and come back, play a final, and go back out to his stag again.
Yeah,
not a bad place to be in, to be fair.
I remember one of her changing rooms, we lost a game, and some of the boys were excited about going on the stag do the next day, and the manager grabbed everybody around again, one of those negative team talks, and he wasn't happy about the stag do, which wasn't going to affect any games, and he's just sort of basically sort of putting the stag under a bit of pressure not to go. He said, I know what I'd rather have at my top table at my wedding, a championship medal rather than some memories of a piss up over in Newcastle.
No.
Whereas the boys are thinking, can we not just try and do both?
Yeah, well, that's all about good when you say it like in the actual months before the wedding, but do you think he's going to look back on that in 20 years time and remember, geez, it was great crack and we didn't go on my stag that time.
And we didn't win a championship at the end of it all.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in more news, so this Sean Kavanagh stuff looks to be coming to a bit of a head. So obviously he tweeted, or he didn't tweet out that picture. That picture circulated. I don't think, by all accounts, he didn't want that to get circulated. It was going around WhatsApp groups, that picture of his bruised and cut face.
Yeah.
And sort of like the Stephen Ward thing, I suppose. He probably maybe needs to learn up on how WhatsApp works. People share these things very quickly. But so Tyrone have come out and they've deemed Sean Kavanagh's injury to be accidental in a statement. They said, Tyrone GA has now completed its investigation into the incident during the course of the Senior Football Championship, Eden Dork v Moy, in which Sean Kavanagh incurred a serious head injury. The Tyrone Competitions Control Committee, CCC, on request, considered the referee's report of the game and viewed a video recording of the incident in which Sean was injured. The CCC was satisfied that the referee was well positioned in clear view of the incident and adjudicated on that matter appropriately. Tyrone GA takes the opportunity again to wish its former senior football team captain, Sean Kavanagh, a speedy recovery from the injury that he sustained. Like, I spoke to Sean last night, actually, and he still hasn't seen this video, but obviously Tyrone have. He seemed to reckon that he was sort of promised he would see it last week, but still hasn't been sent on the video. But by all accounts, it's accidental, this clash that happened, the Eden Dork game. And like, this is sort of in response to Eden Dork, who came out first with a very strong statement of their own, probably, and rightly so, getting pissed off at some of the coverage that was going around their team, especially. They won the game. Eden Dork, St. Malachy's GAC, this is their statement, would firstly like to take this opportunity to wish Sean Kavanagh a speedy recovery. I'm just going to skim through it here. We as a club would like to advise that we have been deeply disappointed by the aspersions cast upon our players and club in respect to this incident. It is quite clear that a blind trial by media has occurred in relation to this matter, causing the individual player and the club a great deal of vexation. It should be noted that this was a collision that occurred during the course of play and in plain view of the referee and match officials whilst the ball was in play. No sanction or disciplinary action ensued at that time. Eden Dork would like to state firmly that it is the opinion of the club and individual player that this was an accidental and unfortunate collision, and we hold any suggestion to the contrary as being defamatory. The club wishes to add that they are gravely disappointed by any media publication linking this incident to an overarching suggestion of an endemic problem of violence in Tyrone. The club warns that the individual player and club are taking legal advice in respect of comments published on social media, inferring and expressly stating that this was a deliberate act. Like, the statement's, it's much longer than that, so that's just sort of the main parts. They're seeking legal advice, and to be honest, like, if, especially if this video does sort of prove, and the referee saw it and judged on it at the time, if it was accidental, then it is, like, it's a player and a club's reputation here that are being sort of dragged through the mud, and that is pretty libelous. And I don't personally, now I know I'm from Ulster, but I don't like the narrative that does come out annoyed when someone is seen fighting in Tyrone or anywhere in the north. Like, you see it everywhere. Like, you know, Nordies are a different breed, or what do you expect? Or, you know, they've done nothing. I saw one last night. They've done nothing good for the game in football or off the ball.
Jesus, okay.
You know, so some of it is virginal. Like, it's more than insulting sometimes, but especially with this crowd in Dork. I mean, now suddenly they're being tarnished with all of Tyrone fighting and all the fights going on in Derry. And that is sort of what does bring me back to it, because I think, Jesus, we could help ourselves out a lot more by not beating the head off each other every time, you know, there's a game. And, like, I'm sitting around Saturday night, I get a message through, it's an all-or video, it's an all-or fight, it's an all-or game in Derry, it's Greenlough fee ball on the screen, and there's an umpire pushed over after the game, the referee is jumped straight into by a spectator and pushed over to the ground, and they all just sort of walk off the pitch. Like, you know, it's so normal now, and I'm all for competitiveness, but, like, this is just too much.
And that incident as well, the video that I saw, the incident that the referee that was pushed over?
Yeah, eventually.
Like, that seemed to happen after, it seemed to happen after everything had calmed down. And the guy just kind of run on from nowhere and knocked him down. But, like, just on relation into the Moy Eden Dork incident in particular, I mean, everyone, when everyone kind of got the, you know, everyone got the message, there was 6 red cards, there was 20 yellow cards, so it was just assumed that it was just this, it must have been, you know, completely out of control, whereas accounts have come out since just that because there was a couple of incidents, the referee was maybe right to, you know, lay down the law, and in laying down the law, he ished out 20 yellow, the 6 red cards were all. But I suppose what the problem was that, like, so, like, Sean Cavanagh looking for the video, and I'm assuming he wants to see the video because he was concussed and he doesn't know what happened, so he'd like to see it for himself. And did Moy themselves as a club not say when contacted that the incident was open to interpretation? And this was after Eden Dork had kind of come out in defence, which they were right to do, because, as I said, everybody kind of drawn the conclusion that it was completely dirty, and because of the state of Sean Cavanagh's face, that must have been deliberate. So as well as that, as well, like, Moy saying that the incident was open to interpretation, there was, like, rightly or wrongly, most people's opinions would have been affected by a WhatsApp message, WhatsApp voice message that was doing the rounds that suggested it was intentional as well. So you can't take that WhatsApp voice message as a fact, obviously, but it did contribute to the kind of narrative around that particular game, and maybe suggested that it wasn't completely black and white. But, like, you have to take the Tyrone County Board in their word. They've said that they've reviewed the video and it was completely accidental. And on the back of that, Eden Dork are dead right to kind of come out and defend themselves, you know? But it's kind of what you were saying there, Conan, about kind of the interpretation of Northern football and Ulster football. Like, I completely agree. Like, these things happen everywhere. And it does seem Ulster football and maybe even Tyrone football is getting the kind of raw end of the stick. But, like, anyone that read, there was an article that Dermot Crowe wrote in the Sunday Independent yesterday, and it was about kind of a history of some of the violent incidents back in Tyrone. And it was, like, it was really stark read. Like, I was aware of some of them, but I wasn't aware of all of them, and it made for some really stark reading. And it was particularly in relation to, like, somebody died as a result of fan violence at a Tyrone minor match back in 1977. And the article goes on to list like any amount of incidents that happened in Tyrone specifically, and some of them are terrible. And, like, while you have to acknowledge that, you know, these incidents do happen everywhere, I don't think the way to kind of go about solving it is saying when the finger is pointed at you, the solution, I don't think, is to say, oh, well, this happens everywhere. It's to acknowledge that you have a problem first, and then to try and sort that out, you know, that kind of way, because it does happen everywhere. But God, anyone reading that article yesterday would have thought, Jesus, like, Tyrone definitely has a problem. Everywhere it does, but you can't argue with the facts that are being presented here.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree, because, like, you know, as much as I don't like that sort of narrative, or, like, you know, everybody in Ulster being painted with this brush, I do, and I have said last week as well, that we would help ourselves a lot more by, you know, stop continuously punching in the face off each other every time there's a game, or, you know, I'm not saying it's happening every game, but it is happening. And, like I said, like, I don't like that I'm all for that competitiveness, and I don't mind, you know, a bit of argy-bargy and stuff like that, and I do think that this is embedded too much in the culture to weed it out completely. Like, it's almost like a coming of age thing now, you know, for a team, when you have to finally stand up to being pushed around and, you know, fight back sometimes physically. That is sort of a real red letter day sometimes, you know, for teams to do that. But this stuff is just far too much. Like, fans coming in, like, it loses complete control. And the more that we're seeing videos of this, like, we got that video sent to us, the one of Greenlock and Ball on the Screen, got sent to us four times from four different people. Like, you know, so, like, this is spreading like wildfire, and then people are saying, get this to the media because it'll go even bigger. And it's madness. Like, and the more that people are seeing that, the more normalised that this is becoming, that people can run onto the pitch and have their say with a referee, a club referee.
Well, listen, well, especially when nothing has been, not that or very little has been done about it, you know.
Yeah.
Because I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean there, as in, like, it's a coming of age thing, and you will hear senior inter-county teams refer to that. Like, how often have you heard the Battle of Omagh referred to by Dublin as the day that they came of age, the day that they weren't being pushed around, the day that they were able to live up to this Tyrone team who had such a reputation of being the manliest team in GAA, and they went up to Omagh and they stood up for themselves. And, like, both teams were absolutely ridiculous because it happened right beside the sideline. I mean, there's one thing to stand up to not being pushed around, and, like, if you go to, like, GAA games around the country, I would say club games, county games, everything, you will see some sort of a argy-bargy. It might only be like a minor thing, but you'll see it fairly regularly. But there's one thing like that happening, and kind of players sort of, you know, standing up for themselves, and, you know, like, if they see a teammate in trouble, going in to help, and, like, they're kind of trying to deal with that when the referees have a prerogative to deal with the third man in. But that's one thing. But then when you see, when supporters or officials, even officials, think they have a right to get involved, it just, that's where the line should be drawn. But, like, what's being done to combat is, like, in that same Sunday Independent article that I talked about earlier on, Pat McCartney, he used to be a county chairman in Tyrone, and he was saying that fines is not the way to go, and that's how clubs are being dealt with. If you suspend a team for particularly grievous offences, and there's been a few in recent weeks that would probably, you know, warrant close enough to a suspension, that's probably the only way to go, because if you are that extreme with your punishment, well, then they'll absolutely think about not doing it again. And I know, like, fines the club, but not in the same way that reputationally they'll be hit by being suspended from competition for a particular amount of time. I think they're going to have to start looking at that if this sort of thing is going to become as regular as it seems to be in the last few weeks.
Yeah, and we'll move it on. Like, we've talked about this enough. And the sad thing is, we're definitely going to be talking about it again.
Much.
Like, we're going to be talking about it again all the way up to March, probably, until the club championship is over. But you mentioned the Sunday Independent. There was a report in the Sunday Independent this week that Mike Solan is in line for the Mayo job. We know that, but Enda McGinley is on his ticket. So if the Mayo under 20 manager gets the Mayo senior job, then the Sunday Independent are saying that Tyrone legend McGinley will be on his backroom team. Obviously, one thing. Three All-Irelands with Tyrone as a player. He's obviously a real legend around Tyrone. I'm not sure what he's done much as a coach, but obviously he's got a lot of experience he can bring, and probably can bring good experience with how to transition from being a successful underage team to being a successful senior team, you know, if that's sort of part of Mike Solan's philosophy, looking to bring some of the younger boys through, which we all know that Mayo need. How do you feel about that? Is that a partnership that excites you out in Mayo?
Yeah, I think so. When you hear somebody of the caliber of Enda McGinley, you know, being linked with the job, it's promising, especially because, like, Mike Solan, though he's had experience with the under-20s, his experience as a senior manager would be fairly limited. So to have somebody who's with All-Ireland winning experience involved would be definitely promising. But just, you mentioned kind of Enda McGinley's experience there as a player, but I know he's been involved in the international rules as a physio as well, so just while it mightn't be as a selector and like that, to have that sort of experience as well will definitely be a benefit. So it seems like Mike Solan will be kind of compiling a fairly decent background team if he does get the job, because he'll have no doubt his brother Barry, who has been involved in as a strength and conditioning coach for the last few years, will be involved too. So it's still kind of up in the air, you know, down in Mayo, whether it be Mike Solan or James Thorne. Like, if it is to be Mike Solan, to hear those sorts of names linked with as part of his ticket is encouraging anyway.
Yeah, the article also says that it's all understood that a former high profile Mayo footballer would be part of his management team as well, so, like, that is interesting. And It's good that he's sort of going that route. I think it bridges the gap a bit more to the players and to the dressing room that was there before. Who was on Horan's ticket before? Like, who was in his management team?
Over various different stages. So James Horan would have been there for 4 years. So Donny Buckley would have been there, I think, since 2013, and before him, Keane O'Neill was involved. So Keane O'Neill went to Kerry, then he's gone on to Kildare since. Then you would have had Peter Burke from my own club. He only stepped down from set up when at the end of last year, along with Tony McEntee and Tony Buckley, actually. But like Kieran Shannon is a sports psychologist. Ed Cotton, who would have been a skills and development coach, and then you would have Barry Nolan as well as Tom Prendergast, who's been a kind of a close confidant of James Horan for a number of years. So like, I think if James Horan does back in, obviously you can't kind of include some of the names of them in there already, but I would be fairly sure, having experience of the setup, he knows of the value of a kind of a good backroom team. So I like, whoever he does have, if he does get the job, I'd say would be fairly top notch. I mean, there's fairly wild rumours that he'd have Peter Canavan on board, but they haven't been in any way substantiated whatsoever. I'd say people are just linking the kind of Sky Sports connection and putting two and two together and making five. But I think if James Horan was to get the gig, I'd say he'd have a fairly impressive backroom team in place as well.
Well, there is previous with that, with Roy Keane and Martin O'Neill striking up a famous relationship on ITV and now managing the Ireland team. God love us all. But it is interesting because Westport obviously lost by a point to Braithwaite at the weekend. But I think it sets the path clear now for a decision to be made a bit more imminently.
Yeah, well, I suppose that I think Westport, no more than my own club, Kilmarnock, probably have one league game left, but they're promoted already. But that'll be James Horan's kind of commitment mostly over for the season. But I actually watched that game at the weekend, and Brave and Westport probably should be in a semi-final. Braithwaite dominated the first half, but then in the second half, Lee Keaton kind of came into it, and he marked Matthew Owen. He'd would have been Mayo under 21 in 2016, really kind of bright future ahead of him. He had a really good first half, but Lee Keegan went on him, and Lee Keegan does what Lee Keegan does, and he had marked him out of him within 15 minutes. Matthew Owen was sent off after getting the black card. And then Westport had loads of chances, they missed them, and then Rob Henley stepped up to kick a monster free, I think it was his fourth of the day, and Braithwaite kind of, despite being down to 14 men, kind of held Westport off in injury time, went through by a point. So big win for them, but Westport will definitely be kicking themselves this week.
Great stuff, Connor. Next up, we're going to talk to Michael Hurley of Castlehaven.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Michael Hurley, what a win for Castlehaven at the weekend. All-Ireland finals, Nemo Rangers gone from the Cork Senior Football Championship at the quarter-final stages. I mean, Harry Redknapp has done some job with you boys.
Yeah, look, absolutely amazing win, I suppose. I don't think anyone, I suppose, outside of our own camp expected it. As you said, I think Harry Redknapp is getting a lot of credit for the win yesterday. I think he was delighted when he seen the scoreline.
did he bring in any old boys to help you over the line? Jermaine Defoe, Peter Crouch, any of those boys?
No, I suppose he quoted a lot of them, but no, we didn't get to see any of them, I suppose. I know, but in fairness, Harry, he's an exceptional manager, and I suppose a lot of the things he said, I suppose, was although it's a different sport, soccer and football, a lot of the traits carry over, I suppose. Teamwork, just personalities on the pitch, leaders. So yeah, look, he was a great addition over the summer, in fairness.
So like, I'll move off this very quickly because Liam Collins will start to get a bit irate listening to it, but was he useful for you, like, when he was in? Did he have a good bit to say?
No, he did, as I said. He's such a good manager, and the experience he has was just exceptional. And just some of the stuff he said to us, just stick to us, as I said, about leadership, teamwork, and just such a great fellow to have around, just admirable. And as I said, a lot of stuff he said, just stick to us. And we used a lot of it yesterday in the game, thank God.
Yeah, and tell me, what the hell happened in the game yesterday? Not 3-0 at half time. You had the wind. I mean, God almighty, it almost felt like I was back home with the glorious land of Ulster, where all the defences are tight and the goalkeepers are bored.
Yeah, exactly. I actually, it's interesting enough, I was actually reading through Twitter there last night, just seeing a few tweets about the game and stuff, and I think I read one comment, there was actually, it related back to Ulster football again, but... To be honest with you, in the game it was anything but. I suppose we went a little bit more defensive than our previous games because we knew the attacking threat that Nemo had. But it was actually just a tale of just very bad scoring. I think they had 9 wides in the first half and we had 8. That tells its own story. I suppose it was unlike Nemo. But I suppose we were a bit. We could have been ahead a bit more at half time, but saying that, we were delighted to be 3 points up, I suppose. But yeah, holding Nemo scoreless in a half, I suppose, is probably unheard of in the last number of years, but we're delighted.
Well, that's it. I was interested to know sort of what you were like at half time. Like, were you a bit worried that, you know, with the wind you were 3 points up just and could have been more, or were you happy that you managed to keep them scoreless, as you said?
A bit both, I suppose. We were a small bit worried that we didn't push on. I suppose myself, I missed a goal chance. I think five or 10 minutes in, I should have put it away. And I suppose we were a bit careless with the ball. We had most of the possession, but we felt we should have been more than 3 points up. But we were also looking positive. Yeah, as I said, when we kept Nemo scoreless, we weren't cocky, but we were confident that we kind of had him. We had him on the edge when we had kept him scoreless for the first half.
Yeah, and it's interesting your story there. 5 years ago, you came off the bench and scored 1-1 to beat Nemo in the first round. Yesterday, you scored 1-1 to beat them in the quarter final. Did you notice that yourself?
I did. Yeah, it was actually my championship debut was against Nemo themselves. I suppose. Look, it's great to play against a team like Nemo. Anytime Castlehaven have come up against them, they've just been cracking games. I suppose two attacking teams. Which I suppose, as you mentioned, look, it's good to get in the score sheet. And I suppose 5 years ago, I think it was my brother Brian who set me up for the 1-1. To be honest, I didn't do a whole pile. And again, the same yesterday, the work was done. I was just at the right place at the right time, really.
Your goal sounded like it did come at the right time, though, in the second half.
It did, yeah. I think it was just a few minutes into the second half, and it was something we mentioned at half time. I think nearly every team probably mentioned at half time the next 10 minutes are crucial. We knew if we could just tack on a few more scores, they were in big bother. And I suppose a goal was just perfect. I mean, the goal just it kills the life out of a team. So yeah, came at the perfect time, thank God.
Was there a bit of bite going into this game, Michael? Because I know he's drew in 2015, and obviously they went on and won it, but you boys were a bit annoyed that a late point from Mark Collins wasn't given, so you could have won that game at the time.
Yeah, exactly. It was something we referenced, I suppose, during the week, and even in the dressing room before the game. I think in 2015, a lot of our, I suppose, bigger players, the likes of Brian, Mark Collins, Damien Clann, I suppose didn't perform to the potential that they expected of themselves. Our manager Liam mentioned that. He said it straight out that we didn't perform in 2015. So yeah, as you said, there was a bit of bite there. We wanted revenge, albeit 3 years later, I suppose, but we haven't played them since. So yeah, certainly, look, it was, I suppose, definitely a bit of bite, and look, it was nice to get one over Nemo, I suppose.
Is this the sort of one now where you start thinking, like, listen, we've beaten Nemo Rangers and Munster champions, like, sky's the limit here?
No, definitely not.
Are you just saying definitely not?
I suppose. No, I honestly mean it. I think, I suppose, before the game, everyone outside the camp gave us no chance. After the game, everyone outside the camp is going to expect us, as you said, the sky's the limit. But I say this honestly, our the group of players we have and the management are, we're a grounded bunch of people, and we won't get too excited. Look, a great win against Nemo side who has been very successful, but it's only a quarter final win at the end of the day. If you look at four teams left in the championship, they're every bit as good as Nemo, if not better. So no, we won't get too excited, don't worry.
Yeah, your own path is always sort of intriguing. Like, is it true that you played senior championship of Cork before you even played a league game with them?
That's right. Yeah, that's very true.
thrown into the deep end.
A bit of a surprise to myself, I suppose. It was 2016, 2 years ago. I was only an under 21 player. We went on a great run under 21. We won the Munster, made an All Ireland final. Unlucky to lose out to Mayo. And I suppose as the year went on, I was just gathering confidence. I found myself playing very well. All of a sudden, after the All Ireland final, I was called up to the seniors. As you said, having played no league. And all of a sudden I'm thrown into the championship team. So yeah, it was a bit of a surprise myself, but look, I'm not kind of the only one, I suppose. Everyone has their own story, but yeah, look, it's interesting enough.
Yeah, you're like, it's not like you're coming from bad stock. So you're the youngest of four brothers, is that right? Brian, Shane and Stephen. I believe the Shane and Stephen are still playing junior.
That's right, yeah. Shane is the oldest. Shane actually played yesterday. He was wing forward, number 10. Everyone in the club is saying he's like a fine wine, he's getting better with age. He's 35 now at the moment. And it's actually interesting, when we won the counties in 2012 and 13, Shane wasn't getting much of a look in, and I'd say he was nearly looking to nearly pack it up, but in fairness to him, he never gave it up. And he's, as I said, he's having an exceptional year this year. Stephen, I suppose, God bless him, probably runs in a family, has had a lot of injuries the past few years. He actually got hip operations a good few years back now, and they've kind of caught up with him. So yeah, he's only kind of junior now, but a fellow who had a lot of talent but didn't, I suppose, fulfill it. And yeah, I suppose Brian, sure, he's, look, the only word I can say with him really is it's good to see him back playing. I think fella is probably look at his past a bit too much now. You can't really expect too much about him, but as I said, I'm just delighted to see him back in the field. He's a player who probably shouldn't even be back playing. He probably should be retired, but that just sums up the person he is, really.
Yeah, it's always come back on Twitter being compared to Tiger Woods, but when you look at what Brian's been through, it's like Tiger Woods' comeback was almost as good as Brian Hurley's.
Exactly, I actually seen that myself. No, I had a good old chuckle at it.
He must be some sort of inspiration for you though, like watching him and all the stuff he's come through.
He is, and he's taught me a lot of lessons that have kind of made me as a person and a player today, really, I suppose. Having someone like him there for you is just exceptional. I think he was just, when we were younger, he was the person who dragged me off the couch, I suppose, when I wanted to play FIFA, he wanted to go and kick ball. So yeah, he's definitely a massive inspiration to me.
I was just going to ask about that dynamic, especially with you being the youngest with the three older brothers. I mean, I take it that toughened you up.
It did, yeah. I suppose I was always the smallest of the four, so if there was any fight at home, I'd say I was the one to kind of run away, I'd say, because I wouldn't be very competitive in that age. But certainly Brian's, I suppose to describe him, he's a tough individual, and he doesn't like losing, so he'll always tough people up around him, really, because he's just a tough young really.
Yeah. Ever any infamous run-ins with any of them?
We did, yeah. Plenty over the years, to be honest. As I said, I wasn't involved in much there, but the parents had awful hassle with us when we were younger. I'd say it was mostly over stupid stuff. Probably who wanted a PlayStation control or who wanted a remote control, but yeah, there were plenty of run-ins when we were younger, in fairness. Still is, I suppose.
And what would that dynamic be? You know, I'm always interested in brothers playing on the football pitch. Like, would you sort of look out for each other a bit more, or would you have a bit more arguments than maybe other teammates on the football pitch together?
No. It's interesting, and it's probably hard to kind of believe or imagine, it's totally different once you kind of cross the white line on a football field. I always say to people, I'd fight I wouldn't say fight, but you know, we wouldn't, we mightn't get on as well as we, as brothers should maybe sometimes, but when it crosses the white line, it's like the whole team, you're always there for each other. If there's a bit of a scrap or anything on the football field, your brothers are the first people to back you up. And that's no different with my brothers. I suppose from growing up with them, just so close, and as I said, they're the first people to back you up on the football field.
So what, you start the fights and then you let Brian and Shane finish them off for you?
Yeah, Brian is usually the people to finish them off. Now, in fairness, he's the biggest fella. I'd let him do the job there. I'd say most fellas are scared of him, to be honest.
And what was it like growing up in, was it around the harbour in Union Hall that you grew up, Michael?
It was the harbour. Our house is literally 30 yards from a pier. It has about 20 trawlers. The beach is only 100 yards away. When we used to be playing when we were younger, it was out in the pier. The pier is massive altogether. We kind of used to use it as an old football pitch, and the parents used to be killing us because we used to use the house as our goalpost. Obviously, there was no goalpost around in. So the two top windows, it's Brian's bedroom window and Stephen's bedroom window, they were two goalposts. And there used to be balls flying between them, and the father used to have to paint the house every year, and he used to go mad at them.
I saw a great quote, I think it was from Brian. It was growing up in Union Hall, it got him used to keeping mind of his possession anyway. What sort of area was it?
It's just a small little fishing area. But the village we're in Union Hall, it's such a small village. Everyone knows everyone. There's not a stranger around. Even from the fishing there, a lot of people come in from other countries and stuff to fish on the boats, and just very friendly. It's such a friendly community, and I suppose as you related to Brian, it's just everyone's very kind to each other, and we always remember where we're from, really.
Yeah, and tell me, like, it must be weird for you, like, getting dropped into the Cork senior panel in 2016, but I mean, you're probably far too used to it now, the controversy, you know, when Cork go out. It seems like Cork can't lose a game without some sort of a shitstorm and inquiry and Tomás Boucher talking about it on the Sunday game. How have you found all that, you know, just getting dropped into this?
Yeah, I suppose since I've been there, that has been there, I suppose. I haven't really seen the better days, as fellas say. But yeah, look, it's hard. I think a lot of the criticism... we're probably not fulfilling our potential at all, fair enough to say. But it's a lot of it is undue, I suppose. Fellas don't go out to lose a game. Fellas don't go out to play poorly. As I say, every day we go out, we remember where we're from, our community, and it's more importantly, but our county as well. We don't go out to lose a game. Fair enough, we don't fulfil our potential, but we're doing our best. So yeah, it's hard to take, but look, it's just stuff you have to kind of pass by and just take no notice of, really.
Do you think sometimes there's maybe, like, I think we get this in Derry, we're a Division 4 team now, but you're sort of living off good teams in the past and people expect you to be, you know, better and competing for Ulsters. Is there a bit of a inflated expectation with Cork, do you find, because of not been that long ago since you won in All-Ireland?
Yeah, maybe that's part of it, I suppose. It certainly is. But if you look at it, there's not many players left. I think more of it is probably success at underage level, maybe under 21. When people see, I suppose, Cork winning Munsters under 21 and the few All-Irelands they've won in the past whatever decade, they automatically presume that's going to relate to senior success. Obviously, we've learned that it doesn't, but I think people just presume that. But it's our transition. It's a massive step up from when we're to senior, so I think it's fairly false that people do presume that. But yeah, look, I suppose I can see certainly where they're coming from. Yeah, to presume that.
And like, is there what would you be sort of thinking for next year now? Like, is there a Munster Championship in Cork? You know, is there a Division 2 title in Cork?
Certainly, yeah. There's, like, I suppose everyone's sick of saying it, there is great potential in Cork. I think we're kind of rebuilding, I suppose, is the word I could use. A lot of younger faces in there, especially last year when Ronan came on board. Sean Hayes with him, who was the under 21 manager, and Sean would have been under 21 for 3 or 4 years maybe, so he knew all the under 21, I suppose, potential players. So they brought in a lot of young fellas, so I suppose the word he was rebuilding. But yeah, look, there's definitely, as you mentioned, a Division 2, I suppose, is probably our first priority, but one step further down the line. But yeah, look, we're just looking to progress really more than anything. I think Ronan, in fairness, he just needs to be given a chance. Fellas in Cork are very quick to judge, I suppose, on managers' first their first seasons. I mean, managers have to be given a chance, 2-3 years, and then I suppose they can be judged in more.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And tell me now, what's the schedule like with Castlehaven now over the next week or two?
We're playing in 2 weeks' time, I think. It'll probably be the Sunday evening. Double header, I'd say, in Parky Ring. So I'd say this week will be light enough training. I'm actually up in Carlow in college myself, so I kind of do my own thing during the week, and I'll be back down on Friday night with the lads training.
Brilliant. So you can miss the yoga sessions and the video sessions and all the rest?
Yeah, we usually keep our video sessions till Friday night, so anyone who's being slated won't really miss it, so unfortunately you'll have to be there for that. Which I suppose, as I said, this week is kind of more unwinding, recovering the body, and I suppose next week, Friday night, Sunday morning, we'll look at the video, and that's where we'll learn and probably become a better team again, hopefully.
Have you seen much of the violence, or I say violence, but well, it is violence, and much of the violence going on up in Ulster, and you know, some of the fights that are coming. Is it something that you're not used to yourself?
I did see, you know, I saw Twitter's a great place to see them, so I think nearly everyone sees them these days. You can't really get away with it. I wouldn't say it's unknown to us. There's plenty of fights and games on here, don't worry. But yeah, look, I suppose it's the thing in Gaelic football. It's probably getting worse. It's not great to see, in fairness. I've seen the I don't know if you've seen it, but it was the West Cork Junior final here 2 weeks ago. I think that was as bad as any fight in the north or wherever, anywhere in the country. But it's hard to put a finger on, I suppose. A lot of people are blaming, I suppose, the kind of rules and who's allowed onto the pitch. Other people are probably blaming the referee and all that, but it's hard to know where this is coming from, but it's certainly something in the GAA that I've seen in the last 2 years and 2 weeks that's getting worse, and it'll probably have to be looked at, I suppose.
Yeah, well, here, Michael, thanks very much for your time and all the best with the club championship.
No bother, thanks very much.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens yeah. and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great. Yeah, there was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was one of those, he had the same match as me. He was kind of making out terrible, unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure,
50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name. This Peter Leahy saga has probably dragged on long enough, but I did find it interesting watching it unfold over the last few weeks. On one side, you have Gers who left the panel and a bit of a backlash that they got for going through the national media and some of the words that they used. On the other side, you have the manager, Peter Leahy, some people suggesting all his wrongdoings. Now, when you have black and white, you have more reasonable, more rational people coming in the middle saying that the truth must be in there somewhere, it must be grey. And off the back of that, they will conclude that some women have done wrong, but Peter Leahy also must have done wrong. So the suggestion or the narrative that sort of came out of that was that Peter Leahy is just a bad manager, and that sort of started becoming accepted. And I thought that was a bit harsh, because very few of us in the media have been managed by Peter Leahy. Yes, we've spoken to people who have been managed by him, but I thought it was important to get one more tale, I suppose, of his, or one more account of his management skills. And it comes in the form of Laura Newman, who played under him in Westmeath in 2010 and 2011. Laura has played for Westmeath for 8 or 9 years at this stage. Peter Leahy comes in, she loses her place under Peter Leahy, but she still thinks he's a great manager. They go from almost being relegated to junior to almost, sorry, to winning the All-Ireland Intermediate Final. And I just think Laura's piece here is a very good one. So Laura, you were managed by Peter Leahy for 2 years in Westmeath, 2010 and 2011, am I right in saying? Can you just sort of paint a picture of what it was like as a Westmeath footballer back then?
Yeah, so probably a bit of background is that in 2009 we were in a relegation to go down junior, beginning of 2009, and we came through that anyway. And then Peter came in 2010. Actually, I was just looking back at a few fixtures from 2010. Our very first fixture was a challenge match against Cavan. And we were beaten by nearly 30 points, I think, out in Balnagore. It was home for us. And then, so that's early 2010. Obviously, then late 2011, we beat Cavan by points and then the All-Ireland. So that's probably, you know, a good indication of how far we came in 2 years with Peter. And so in 2010 he just came in and like he just kind of changed everything that we had known before. You know, he brought in free gyms, meals after training, kind of unheard of stuff for us anyway. Back then we kind of, you know, it was just things that we just didn't do. We had, you know, we had a calendar done out for the whole year. We knew when every challenge match was, every training session was going to be. You know, it was such a professional setup. And, you know, that's, I think, what changed our fortunes. You know, we kind of started to believe in something. You know, everyone was taking it a bit more seriously. We were far fitter. So, and I think, you know, a lot of his input was why we got there.
And like, so obviously he came in, it must have meant business by sorting all this stuff out. Did he have a chat with you? Did he set any goals long term for you or anything like that as a team?
Well, in 2010 we were out training in Harbourfield. We usually trained in Mullingar. He got us all around and he said, "Girls, you know, I'm telling you, we're going to win in All-Ireland." And, you know, like I said, in 2009, we had been in the relegation to go down junior. We were looking at each other going, yeah, is he for real? Like, we're not going to win in All-Ireland, obviously. And, we didn't believe it. That's no doubt about it. We definitely, like, we're kind of laughing to ourselves going, you know, like, that's lovely, but we're not going to win in All-Ireland. And just, like, as the month went on, we never did much now in 2010. We didn't get out of the group. We're still in Division 4. But, you know, we had the year there to kind of instill a bit of, I suppose, belief in us and get our fitness levels up, our football, our tactics, our football and style. We had a year there to get that in gear. And 2011 then, everything just took off. We'd won everything that year. You know, because I think our attitudes had changed over the course of 2010, you know, that even though we didn't get anywhere, you know, we knew that it was possible to push on the following year, and we did exactly that. And I think his beliefs, his tactics, his way of working with everyone, I think that was the biggest factor in it all.
And like, what was his relationship like with you, or you know, as a player? Like, how did you find working under him?
Yeah, I was in the bench for 2011. To be honest, I didn't play much in 2010 and 2011. I played more in 2010, but in 2011 I played the league and I played maybe a couple of minutes here and there, but I didn't get much game time under Peter. And obviously, like, you know, that was really disappointing, you know, that was in us. you know, every player wants to play. And like, to be fair, he's an honest man. He wouldn't turn around and say, you know, oh, I know I didn't play the other day, but I'll tell you next week. No, I promise. I'll, you know, you're doing well. You're flying. You know, and he wouldn't tell you that. He'd tell you straight up how it is. And throughout, you know, a couple of training camps, you know, a couple of weekends, and one of the training camps we had one-on-one sessions, and he said, "Listen, Laura, I was a wing back." He turned me into a corner forward. And he said, "You're fast and all of that, but you're not fit enough, and that's basically why you're not playing." And like, so I mean, I didn't really want to hear it, because I was 25, 26. You don't really want to be told you're not this and you're not that. But suppose, you know, it was honest. Like, I wasn't as fit as other girls, and if that was what he was looking for, well, sure, what could I say? You know, I still stuck it out, and I still tried my best, tried to get on that team. I never really did. I came on maybe one or two of the championship games, but in terms of semi-final and final, I didn't see much. But you know, like, it is what it is. He told it how it was, you know, I couldn't say he didn't let me know or I didn't know what was expected of me.
Yeah, so I suppose personally, as a player, you weren't happy, obviously, because you didn't get on the team. But you could probably see what he was doing for the group as a whole and appreciate that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I mean, and everyone had these one-on-one sessions, and it wasn't just me who didn't get in either. You know, there was plenty there. But, you know, even though there was loads, you know, not getting game time, we all stuck it out. You know, there was never a case of not wanting to be there, not wanting to be part of it, because he made you want to play for him. He made you want to, you know, get better and get into his team. He just brought that, I don't know what it, I don't know if you can teach it to someone or coach it to someone. He just brought an energy with him that we all wanted to be a part of, we all wanted to be involved in. And you know, you couldn't fault him for his efforts, for everything he did for us at that time. And you know, like, even though I wasn't playing, I really, really wanted to be part of the team.
Yeah, so how have you found the narrative then that seems to have come out off the back of obviously the Mayo Ladies saga? Like, people have now been saying there were mistakes on both sides, you know, like, the obviously the ladies might have made a wrong move by taking things through the national press, but people are now also trying to accept that maybe Peter isn't that good of a manager. How have you found that?
Well, like, I mean, I'm not sure myself. I don't know what's going on in Mayo. I'm sure those 12 girls, you know, they believe they have their grievances, and that's fine. But there's a few articles about Peter which I just picked up and I just read. I thought it was really unfair. You know, there's 12 girls saying this, so therefore he has to be a bad manager. He's not really a good player, you know, manager or whatever. You know, that's in my experience, in our experience, it's not true. I think it was unfair to make that, that summary of him just by this one story. That, you know, he is a very good manager. I mean, for us, like, we won an All-Ireland coming from nowhere. I mean, you just don't win an All-Ireland without having a good manager behind you. And with the Mayo thing, I don't know what's going on. I'm sure everyone has their grievances, but I can only say from our point of view, from Westmead's point of view, that I think it was unfair. And Peter has done a massive part for us. So,
and he's been called authoritarian in charge of a group, and he's been called intimidating in these one-on-one meetings. Have you experienced any of that? Now, I know you're only one player in one team, but have you experienced any of that in your 2 years under him?
If anything, Peter is, to me, was the opposite of authoritative, because, you know, maybe before managers, especially, you know, going back a few years at inter-county teams, you know, it might have been a bit of a dictatorship. You know, maybe one manager would come in and, you know, he'd have maybe one or two selectors, that'd be all. But with Peter, he brought in, his selectors, he brought in a team around him, and, you know, he delegated out things to his selectors, to his team. And if anything, you know, it was the least authoritarian regime we had. So he was the manager, obviously, and Dalla Mangan there as well, and a few others, But you know, like, you know, authoritarian is definitely not a word that I could say that associates with Peter.
Yeah. And like, what about these fitness sessions, these infamous fitness sessions that we've heard about? I mean, I take it that you were in pretty good shape to go from a junior relegation playoff to win an Intermediate All-Ireland.
Yeah, like, as I was saying, we used to train a good bit in Harbour Field, and we used to train in the rugby club there in Mullingar, and you know, we just knew, and we knew the sessions that were coming up, and you just absolutely dread them. You'd be crying going out in the cars, and we knew they were just going to be so, so tough, me especially, not being that fit, well, you know, like, for future standards anyway. And you, when you get out of the car, it was going to be just so hard, so tough. But to be fair, you know, you just don't get, you don't get anywhere without doing this hard work. Like, we knew it had to be done, and he pushed us and pushed us as hard as he could, and to this day I still haven't trained as hard under anybody. You know, he's like, I heard one of the Mayo girls saying, like, you know, the same thing, they were so, so tough, the training sessions, you know, and kind of a wry smile, and that's how we'd feel as well. You'd just be shaking your head going, geez, how are we going to be able to do this at all? But yeah, they were infamous, all right, but we wouldn't have won anything without them.
And like, I suppose on the whole, would you have said, like, I just think it's interesting, yeah, coming from your point of view, where, as you said, you weren't happy that you were on the bench for those big games, but would you look back and consider Peter Leahy as one of your better managers?
He probably has to go down as our best manager, like, because of where we came from and where we went to. You know, we're Division 4 team, struggling at intermediate, never getting out of the group. Being constantly beaten, even in the Leinster Intermediate, and now because of what happened in 2011, this is why, like, Westmeath are now in Division 1. They're challenging for, they're in the Leinster final against Dublin every year, and I know Dublin are, you know, they're kind of head and shoulders above everyone else at the minute, but you know, they're there, and all those strides are made because of 2011. You know, girls wanting to play football, attitudes been changing the county to the ladies team, all that stemmed from him and stemmed from what we did that year, you know. And I know it's 8 years ago, and you know, things have changed in terms of inter-county ladies football. When 8 years is a long time, but I think now it's, I mean, you go out and it's everything that Peter brought in there, you know, it now has to be done at Westmeath. You know, it's, he laid down a foundation and it's just been built on now.
You raised the standards all over. Laura, thanks very much for your time. That's great.
All right, Conan. No problem.
All right, that's all we have time for. We'll see you back here on Thursday. Thanks to Paddy Power, the sponsors. See you later.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.